Today is April 26th, 2008, and this is Apple Weekly Report, episode number 123, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you would like to comment on anything, or question anything, or say anything, including maybe something about having a boombox over your head while you're courting a girl, just shoot us a note with awr@macobserver.com. It took you a second, didn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been out of the groove for a week, and so I'm a little bit slow.
Yeah, fair enough. You were at NAB, which is kind of where we were, sort of.
Right, right. And thanks to technological limitations imposed on me in the fine city of Las Vegas, i.e. I couldn't get any bandwidth, that kind of left me stuck in a position where I couldn't record.
Right. And then we had Apple's earnings reports. Earnings report and conference call on Wednesday that kept us recording from recording on Wednesday, and as well as other scheduling things on Thursday and Friday. So here we are on Saturday, a week and a half late.
A week and a half late, but we're back, and sorry for the delay, but hey, we're back.
We are back. Yep. Yeah. Hooray. Yay. Woo.
Yeah. Woot. I'll even add it in my own.
Oh, don't shoot me. Oh.
It's okay. I was aiming in the air.
Good to know. Good to know. All right. Well, that's probably our cue to get onto the news, huh?
I think so. I'm assuming that was more than enough for most people's stomach.
Probably.
Apple reported another record-breaking quarter and bought a chip design company. The iPhone saw price cuts and product drops in Europe. Microsoft announced its .Mac-like Live Mesh. And we do have our NAB wrap-up, this week's quick tip scrolling in background windows.
Apple managed to come in above estimates for its second fiscal quarter of 2008 by showing a 43% year-over-year increase in revenue at $7.51 billion U.S. The company reported a net quarterly profit of $1.05 billion, well above the $770 million for the same record-breaking last quarter last year, the March quarter last year. Apple shipped more than 2.2 million Macs during the quarter, up 51% compared to last quarter, and up 54% compared to last year. It also reported 10.6 million iPods shipped during the quarter for a slim 1% quarterly growth rate or 8% annual growth. iPhone sales hit 1.7 million units for the quarter, which was another record breaker for Apple, and CEO Steve Jobs was more than happy to let investors know, saying, quote, "We're delighted to report 43% revenue growth and the strongest March quarter revenue and earnings in Apple's history. With over $17 billion in revenue for the first half of our fiscal year, we have strong momentum to launch some terrific new products in the coming quarters."
And Wall Street's consensus leading up to the earnings announcement suggested Apple would report $6.95 billion in revenue, 10.5 million and 10.5 million iPod shipped for the quarter. Not only did the Street underestimate Apple's performance, but aggressive analysts like Citigroup's Richard Gardner came in under the mark, too. He predicted Apple would report $7 billion in revenue, along with 2.1 million Macs, 9.5 million iPods, and 1.5 million iPhones. The earnings report also showed that deferred revenue or subscription accounting for Apple TV and iPhone is rising dramatically. In September 2007, Apple reported $1.39 billion in deferred revenue for the Apple TV and the iPhone during the second fiscal quarter of 2008. That rose 74% to $2.4 billion.
Apple also announced during its earnings conference call that it is already considering its iPhone application developer program a success, with over 200,000 programmers signed up so far. Along with the strong turnout on the developer front, Apple was also pleased with the number of enterprise-level businesses involved in the iPhone 2.0 beta program. Over one-third of the Fortune 500 institutions are involved in the beta program. And according to CFO Peter Oppenheimer, quote, more are being added every week, unquote. CEO Steve Jobs added, and we think that'll give us unprecedented opportunities to once again disappoint enterprise people by pulling the rug under their feet at any given second. didn't say that. Mr. Oppenheimer also confirmed that the iPhone 2.0 software will be available in late June.
And while Apple turned in stellar financial results for the March quarter that were well ahead of analyst predictions, the after-hours market focused on the company's guidance for the third quarter, which came in below consensus estimates and sent the stock trading lower. Apple offered guidance of $1 per share in profits for its third quarter, which was short of the $1.09 Wall Street is looking for. The company also forecast revenue of $7.2 billion, which was lower than the consensus estimates of $7.2 billion. Now, guidance often trumps current quarter results for traders, especially for a company like Apple, where much of its stock market valuation is based on future results. So while the company crushed second quarter estimates, Wall Street may well be asking what Apple will do for them next week, next month, or next quarter. Be that as it may, shares in Apple closed higher during the regular trading sessions both Thursday and Friday, ending the week at $169.73, its highest point since the stock shed more than a third of its value back in January.
Apple announced on April 22nd that it has agreed to buy PA Semi, a company that designs embedded microprocessors. Sources close to the deal said the transaction cost Apple $278 million in cash. Apple spokesman Steve Dowling stated, quote, Apple buys smaller technology companies from time to time and we generally do not comment on rah, 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 rah. Even though Apple isn't commenting on its plans for PA Semi, it seems possible that it could be considering using the chip maker's designs for upcoming products that rely on embedded processors like new iPods, iPhone, or even a new Apple TV. If so, that could spell bad news for Intel and its push to convince Apple that the iPhone should be based on Intel chipsets. The company introduced PA Semi introduced a 64-bit dual-core processor that it claims was 200% more efficient than comparable chips with a 2 gigahertz processor speed using only 5 to 13 watts of power. PA Semi's chips are already running on hardware sold by NEC, but they aren't likely to show up in any Apple products for at least a year because of product development cycles.
Microsoft introduced its new web-based Live Mesh service on April 23rd. Live Mesh is a .Mac-like service designed to keep data synchronized across multiple computers and handheld devices. Live Mesh is currently available as a technology preview for Windows XP and Windows Mobile users only. But that's right, only XP and mobile. But Microsoft plans on extending the service's reach out to Mac and cell phone users too. Right now, the service includes 5 gigabytes of online storage, multi-computer file synchronization, and Live Mesh Remote Desktop, which lets users control computers and other devices remotely over the internet. It also includes an RSS-style service with notifications when Live Mesh content has been added or changed, live chats with other Live Mesh users, as well as a handful of other web-based information features. So far, Live Mesh sounds similar to Apple's .Mac service, Back to My Mac, Backup, and iSync features. Since Live Mesh is extensible, however, Microsoft is hoping to grow the service into a series of web-based tools through add-ons created by third-party software developers. And Live Mesh requires a Windows Live ID and all of the strings that go along with that. And Microsoft has not said if it will charge for any of the Live Mesh services.
Yeah, I think the only thing missing, Jeff, was a claim from Bill Gates that Live Mesh was new and innovative.
Right. I was really disappointed we didn't hear that.
It seems that slashing the price by almost a third is just what the British cell phone-using public needed to show some interest in Apple's iPhone. After dropping the price of the 8-gig phone by £100 to £169, O2 and other UK iPhone retail outlets reported being sold out of the smaller-capacity iPhone. In addition, the 8-gig unit is being listed as, quote-unquote, no longer available, adding fuel to the Apple is going to release new iPhones at any second rumor files. Adding more fuel to that particular conflagration, Engadget claimed it got a hold of an internal O2 memo stating that the 8-gig model has been tagged end of life. According to the memo, quote, due to the highly successful sales of the Apple 8-gig iPhone, supply chains have today run out of stock and will not be replenishing stock of this product as it has now gone to end of life. Boy, that was hard to get out. Despite the apparent lack of iPhones in the UK, Apple's UK online store is still showing a 24-hour ship time. In the US, however, Apple's website is showing a 5 to 7 day ship time. Stay tuned here or to iPodObserver.com for more information on when and if the iPhone is updated.
And French iPhone carrier Orange executives have been negotiating with Apple to cut the retail price of the iPhone, just as German iPhone carrier T-Mobile and British carrier O2 have already done. At issue are slow sales of the iPhone in France, with the French newspaper Les Echos saying that Orange has sold just 100,000 units so far. And I'll stop just long enough to say I have to apologize for my French accent. It's a side effect of growing up in Missouri. All right.
And fair enough, Jeff.
Apparently, Louis-Pierre Executive Director for France, and Alice Holzman, a Marketing Manager for Orange, met with Apple COO Tim Cook in Cupertino to negotiate a change in their agreement with Apple to end revenue sharing and to allow Orange to sell the iPhone to its customers at heavily subsidized rates, which is a business model used by every other handset manufacturer in France. That said, the executives in question publicly denied such efforts to pressure Apple to change the model, saying, quote, there is no question of changing the economic model of the iPhone, unquote, and that, quote, unquote, everything is going well. And there is no word yet on what Orange plans for its new iPhone pricing.
And let me add to that, and Les Echos and Louis Pion.
Your French is so much better than mine.
Or something. Oh, we love the French. Apple may be prepping to launch a 3G version of the iPhone in Italy soon with Telecom Italia. I can't do a really bad Italian accent, in that I can't do an Italian accent at all, so please forgive me. If rumors are true, the deal will bring more than a 3G iPhone. It will also mark the first time Apple has struck a carrier deal that doesn't include revenue sharing or a long-term exclusivity agreement. Every cell carrier Apple has struck an iPhone deal with so far has agreed to share some of its monthly contract revenue, and Apple has agreed to long-term exclusive distribution deals. It appears that Telecom Italia will have exclusive distribution rights in Italy through the summer, which implies that a 3G iPhone will be available in time for summer. That could mean that other Italian cell providers can jump into the iPhone game before the end of 2008, or, and this seems a lot more likely, it might just mean that Apple and Telecom Italia will be renegotiating for the new version of the iPhone expected at that time. And that sound means that it's time for the Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
And it seems just like a no-brainer to start with Apple's second quarter earnings report.
It does kind of seem like a no-brainer. Let's do that.
Yes. Great idea. All right. So the thing that gets me, not being someone that plays the stock market, I'm just amazed that Apple can report what appears to be good news, and then Wall Street reacts negatively towards that. I mean, how does that happen?
Well, the interesting thing about that, and I used to not understand that too, and I know that a lot of our readers don't understand it, and that's reflected oftentimes by the comments in some of our articles. But here's the deal. Apple's valuation at this point is based on future expected earnings and revenue. And that's opposed to being valued strictly on, say, the company's current assets and their current profits and their current, just their current results. So Wall Street basically is constantly looking ahead at what Apple is going to be doing. And when earnings announcements are made, the Wall Street consensus, right? The various analysts have a consensus on what they think Apple is going to do in the future, in particular, say, the next quarter through the next year. and they have already bumped the price up or down to meet those expectations.
Okay.
So when Apple gives guidance for the next quarter that is below the consensus estimates going into that earnings announcement, the street can react negatively to that because they've already bumped they'd already bumped the value up to the levels that they were expecting. In this case, $1.09 per share. And Apple only offered guidance.
$1.
Exactly. Apple offered guidance for $1. So, yeah, they blew Q2 out of the water, and that's well and good. But Wall Street is, you know, wanting to know what they're going to be doing coming out because they've already bumped the stock up to account for Q2, even though, again, Apple beat Q2.
You know, that's got to be a tough thing for analysts to figure out because of the secrecy Apple has surrounding upcoming products.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's one reason why, one of the many reasons why Apple gets so much attention from analysts and even the mainstream press. The point is that the Apple dipping in after-hours trading wasn't a conspiracy. Apple is the darling of Wall Street still.
Well, that's good to know. But Apple still does historically, or at least recently, seem to be a pretty volatile stock.
It can be, yeah. But, you know, the during the regular trading session on Thursday, the day following the earnings announcement, the stock closed higher, and it closed higher again on Friday. So Wall Street didn't dwell on the lower guidance as much as I was expecting it to.
Which, that's a pleasant surprise.
That is, in fact, a pleasant surprise. So, it all's well that ended well in this case. It was funny when we were listening to the earnings call and we were watching the stock action in the after-hours trading session. The stock was like dipping. It was down $7 a share at one point. And I had missed the part about the guidance. And so, you know, and I think all of us had missed the guidance. And so it's like, why
right,
is the
we're
stock
taking
trading?
All these notes and...
Yeah, we're taking all these notes. It's like, why is the stock going down? I mean, I can't, this earnings announcement is just crushing what was expected. And it wasn't until probably about three quarters through the snooze fest that was the analysts' questions for this particular earnings call. That I finally found that the guidance was lower and that was what was going on.
You know, is it just me or when you're listening to the analysts ask their questions, do you sit back occasionally and just think, what the hell? Why are they asking that?
Well, yeah, sometimes. I mean, you know, a lot of times the analysts all have their deal, right? The thing that they get more than at least what they think other people get, you know, like maybe it'll be the supply side. Maybe it'll be the channel. Maybe it'll be new products. But, you know, like they all think that they don't think they all do have their own little approach to how to guide or how to evaluate any particular company. But in this particular one, they were just obsessing over the margins issue. I mean, just they kept asking the same question over and over again in different ways. And, you know, it's like, you know, have you guys never been to an Apple conference call before? You know that you're not going to get any better answers. And I didn't actually even understand why they were so concerned about margins. This may be my own ignorance. I may have just missed something. But Apple beat its own gross margins estimates. But the analysts were very concerned about some of the underlying factors in those gross margins. And that's
right.
What they were, and that's why it was kind of a snooze fest because they weren't getting in from any information, but they kept asking the same damn questions over and over again.
You know, I think if I was an analyst in on an Apple conference call, I would come up with a whole big long list of questions. And then as each person ahead of me asks one of them, just take it off the list because I know whatever answer they got is the best answer you're going to get. So go on and pick something else.
Well, you know, actually, I imagine that's pretty much what they do. They kept attacking this particular issue, the issue. I know you had to leave early to prepare for a presentation that night, but
right.
They kept approaching this particular issue of the margins from different angles. So they weren't just repeating the same question. They kept, you know, like they just kept like trying to dig for more information in terms of the gross margins and why some various the issues such as component pricing and whatnot hadn't had a better impact.
Okay. Now, all right. Now, speaking of pricing, there was one comment, and I think it was Peter Oppenheimer made it, that totally caught me off guard. And someone had asked about iPhone pricing, and he said that the carriers are free to price the iPhone however they want.
Yeah, and I think he was referring to European carriers.
Right, and that just that completely surprised me because I was not expecting first to hear that and then second to hear that. But yeah, that was for me like a bolt from the blue when he dropped that line.
Yeah, that was actually pretty darn interesting because you know, I think that most of us watching Apple and kind of assume that the pricing, because Apple controls pricing rigorously, especially in the U.S.
Right.
You know, no, you cannot, if you're an Apple authorized dealer and you sell a Mac computer, an iPod, or one would have presumed an iPhone below, I think it's like basically $5 less than Apple's MSRP. They will yank your authorized status. Unlike every other computer company, Apple has been able to and continues to rigorously control that because they don't want retailers driving down the value of the Mac by undercutting each other.
Right, and I can totally get that, and it's interesting that Apple has been able to maintain that type of control over pricing.
Yeah, they're the only company that can do that because they control the whole widget.
And, right.
But they control the whole widget, pretty much the whole widget, most of the whole widget with the iPhone too. And so I think, you know, many of us just have just assumed that the same, you know, agreements were in place for iPhone pricing, but not according to Oppenheimer, where, you know, it basically, what he was basically saying is that, you know, O2 dropped the price and T-Mobile dropped their price and, you know, and these carriers have been dropping their price in Europe and they're pretty much free to do that if that's what they want to do. Apple still has in place its agreement to get a portion of the revenue sharing, and they've already sold the phone to those carriers.
Right. So whatever O2 sells the phone for, ultimately it doesn't matter to Apple because they've already been paid for that phone. So if the company's going to sell it as at a loss, well, that's their loss, not Apple's.
Yeah. Well, it does still matter to Apple for the same reasons that they're care about Mac pricing, because if people are undercutting each other, you know, Apple's not going to be able to sell the phones themselves at their own
right.
retail price,
and it'll in essence devalue the phone.
Exactly. So I don't know. It's kind of definitely an interesting development. It was not anything that I was expecting either. So yeah,
that one was quite a surprise to me.
Oh, wait, we do have, I think this was after you had to leave, Jeff. There was a dumbass analyst question of the day.
Oh, excellent. And now I feel bad that I had to leave and miss it.
And I forget the specifics. I didn't actually bring notes into this. It just kind of popped into my head. But one of the analysts was asking why they can't just shift inventory around so that they don't have any inventory discrepancies between the U.S. and Europe. It's like because he's wanting to know why, you know, phones sold to T-Mobile in Germany can't be brought over to O2 and in the UK. It's like because the phones are sold. The phones are sold. They're sold to other people. I mean, it was like that was the most ridiculous analyst question of the day for sure.
Wouldn't you just love it during one of these conference calls when some analyst asks a question like that, if Peter Oppenheimer just kind of pauses and then says, "You're kidding, right?" I would just love that.
That would be awesome.
You know, maybe one of these days, Peter will be having a bad day and it'll just come out. Because you know he's got to be thinking that when he gets the question.
Yeah, are you kidding me?
I mean, you know, I'm not a financial analyst. I'm not in the middle of the transactions, you know, buying and selling all this product. But I get it. You know, the product has been sold. It went to Germany. Okay, you can't just say, hey, Germany, send the phones to the UK. It doesn't work that way. It's already sold.
Mm-hmm. So that was really weird, but so be it. All in all, it was a great quarter for Apple. How many millions of Macs sold?
It was 2 point something.
It was 2. I'm looking, scrolling up and looking. It's, we should know this. 2.2 million.
2.289.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. You know, it's especially amazing when you take into account the fact that other computer makers are, in essence, struggling right now, and Apple is still able to gain market share.
Yeah, well, you know, as far as struggling goes, there have been, you know, four companies making money in the computer industry, and that was Intel, Microsoft, Dell, and Apple. That's it. You know, everyone else is losing money on computer sales. Everybody was, right. Actually, eMachines was, I think, was turning out a small profit too. But, Apple is, and no one was making anywhere near the profits in terms of percentages that Apple was making. And that's certainly continuing. Right. But now Apple is gobbling up market share just consistently for the last, 18 months, 2 years now?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, it's well over a year. They've been consistently and steadily gaining market share.
Yep, and that's fantastic for the platform. Just absolutely it fantastic.
You know, and it says a lot for Apple and how many computers they're selling, because there are so many computers out there already. So for Apple to be gaining market share, in the same terms that all other computer manufacturers are being gauged by. Wow, that's really saying a lot.
It is, especially with they're gaining much smaller market share on the global market. But when you look at how much of the global market is emerging economies, that it's even more amazing. But they're definitely kicking the most butt here in the U.S. in terms of the Mac platform. And that's a huzzah kind of thing.
It is, and you know, as I'm out doing presentations, speaking, like I ended up doing on Wednesday evening, I'm amazed at how many people are Mac users now compared to what I was seeing at presentations before. And granted, because of my association with Mac Observer and the graphic design community, I expect to have more Mac users than Windows users at events, but I'm seeing a lot more than I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
So from that anecdotal evidence, it seems clear to me that Apple's increasing market share is really making an impact.
And yet I predict that Apple will continue to do poorly in the enterprise market because they're unwilling to play the enterprise game.
You know, they do have a clear track record of not playing well in the enterprise market.
Yep. And a ballsy prediction from me, but I'll stick by it.
You know, I think you're probably safe sticking by that prediction, sadly.
Thank you. Sadly, yeah. You know, I wanted to hear your thoughts on NAB, but before we do that, can we briefly poke fun at Microsoft for Live Mesh?
Oh, you know, I think that we absolutely should. You know, for their brand new, innovative, market-changing product, clearly no one has ever done anything like this before.
Okay, hold on.
Thank you.
They didn't claim that.
I know, but you see, I'm putting words in their mouth because, well, I can.
Fair enough. I also want to poke fun at it for having the worst name ever. What is the deal with their naming? I mean, how can they be so bad at naming products?
You know, that's a really good question. And every vision I get in my head of the room where they have the people that come up with product names, mm-hmm, is so completely politically incorrect. I just simply should not say any of them.
Well, yeah, that's actually part of the problem is they do so much focus group stuff. You know, many of their decisions are focus group based. And, you know, so that's like the opposite of political. That is very politically correct.
Right. You know, and so, yeah, if they're doing focus groups, I mean, okay. Actually, I'm going to set my Wayback Machine several years and go way back to before I was writing all the time and when I was just primarily a consultant in the Mac industry. And I was invited to participate in a market interest panel. And I wasn't told what it was ahead of time. I show up and it's about some Microsoft product. I don't even know what it was. And they had product names and descriptions, and I'm looking at all of this and I'm thinking, this is crap. All of it. This is total crap. I don't even know what company this is, but I wouldn't buy any of it, and certainly not based on the names. Well, then it turns out to be Microsoft and some product that they were working on at the time. Hmm. And so, you know, even in the focus group that I was in, there were several people that were looking at whatever the product was, saying, no, this is a total crock, and by the way, you really need to work on how you name things. And then you can tell how memorable the product is, because I don't even remember what it was now. But it makes me wonder, though, how much attention is Microsoft really paying to the focus groups? Or do they come up with what they want, and then they do focus groups and try and channel those to back up what they've already decided? I don't know.
I don't know either, but the Live Mesh is a bad name, and I just think it's hysterical. It's Windows XP and Windows Mobile only. Vista, not welcome. I mean,
yeah, how about that?
How can that be? How can they release something like this and not have it be for the new operating system?
Well, my guess is that maybe there's some issues working with the company that makes that operating system, and they're having problems getting the right hooks into it. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But that said, you know, I like. I actually think this is good for .Mac. I'd like to see Apple have competition in this area. For one thing, to keep Apple on its toes. I've always felt that Apple doesn't give anywhere near enough attention to .Mac that they should.
You know, I agree with you on that, because .Mac could be so much more than it is. And I find it to be a valuable service for me. But I know that I'm probably in the minority right now.
It's valuable to me too, but it could be a lot more valuable. For instance, back to my Mac could actually work on without having to worry about what kind of router you're going through.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, that would be kind of handy. You know, I think could do more. I mean, .Mac is good. I like .Mac. I happily pay for .Mac. I'm happy about it, but I would like to see it be better, and I'd like to see Apple have a little competition in this area. And also, I think that having Microsoft have a similar service will make it easier for Apple to sell .Mac, especially as more people come from the Windows world.
Oh, absolutely. All right, I just came up with the worst name for Live Mesh. They could have called it Microsoft Black Plague. That would have been worse.
They could have. And, of course, they could have also called it Dot Mesh, and that would have been funny. But Dot Mesh would have been a better name than Live Mesh.
Yes.
Because Live Mesh sounds like it's a drunk person. It is Live Mesh.
I got to synchronize my data.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's enough. That's enough on that. Let's hear about NAB. Now, I know that we're a little bit late coming from this, but what I was really interested in hearing, Jeff, was more on Apple's and Avid's absence from the show, and you know, just anything particularly that hit you over the head.
Okay, well, starting with Apple and Avid totally makes sense, because that was the big thing going into NAB. The two big names that you expect to see there every year weren't there. No booths. And so I know there was a lot of people that were really concerned about what type of impact that would have on the event. And I was too, because I was kind of worried going into it that, well, you know, maybe these companies that prominently display Apple products wouldn't be doing that this year.
You know, someone's banked us for this, and we should probably address it right now. Why don't we go ahead and start off by explaining what NAB is and what that stands for?
Oh, right. All right. So NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, this is the huge, huge conference that that's put on every year in Las Vegas for people in the broadcast industry. And that's both radio, television, and cable.
So we're talking basically like video and audio production stuff.
Right.
Including analog and digital.
Exactly. And yeah, so you have the entire Las Vegas Convention Center packed with booths. And that's saying a lot because it's so big you actually have to take buses to get from hall to hall. And by the second day, I had developed an insane blister just from all the walking I was doing after riding the buses around.
Thanks for taking one for the team.
Hey, you know, dude, I've got your back. So, yeah. All right. So NAB, Apple and Avid, both missing, no booth presence. And in the end, so what? Because both companies actually did have a presence there. They just didn't have booths. They both were doing presentations and classes and things like that. And so they did have representatives at the event, but they did not have their big booths. And on one hand, I can totally see why they didn't have the booths. I mean, that's a huge expense. And if they don't think they're going to get the investment back out of that, well, then does it make sense fiscally to have the booths? And on the other hand, you know, we have like our afternoon editor, John Martellaro, saying, oh, total party foul on Apple's part. They should have had a booth there, and by not having that public presence, you know, they're doing their customers a disservice. So, yeah, it can go both ways, but in the end, I don't think it mattered. The fact that neither company had a booth at the event, I don't think had any significant impact on how many people actually came to the show. And, you know, on some days, the energy was high, and the booths were packed. And then other days, the energy was lower, and the booths not quite so packed, and in some cases empty. But you know, you can have that with a lot of shows. And yes, it was a little bit smaller than it was the year before, but I think a lot of that had to do with economics. And I think there's just a lot of people that thought, maybe we'll have to go next year, we'll save up a little more and then go. But overall, I thought it was a good event. And I thought that there was a lot of really good information there for all the people that went. And the theme that I saw at the event wasn't "Where's Apple?" It was, this is the year that everyone has to start working on the transition to digital and HD. There was a lot of that. Right. So, you know, those were the big things out of the event. And it was really cool seeing so many Apple products in all the booths. I mean, so many of the products that were there were being demonstrated on Mac Pros and MacBook Pros, and I even saw a couple MacBook Airs being used, which actually surprised me because I thought that no one would have a MacBook Air for that type of production work.
Oh yeah, it's not.
Yeah, but there were some demos being run. Kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, clearly the MacBook Air is not the right product to use for video or audio editing. But, you know, there were people there that were showing different products running on a MacBook Air. And that you know, that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure some of that is wanting to have a sexy machine in the booth.
Oh, I'm certain. And speaking of sexy machines, I got to pay a visit to the John Lennon tour bus. Oh, man, that is so cool. And, you know, I ended up missing it at Macworld Expo because it can only be there for a couple days.
Uh-huh.
And so getting to see it in a more private event style thing after the expo floor had closed was really cool because it wasn't packed. It was easy to see what was there. One of the guys that's part of the whole tour bus program. His name is Seamus. He was giving me a tour and showing me everything, answering all my questions. That thing is running on two Mac Pro towers. They have two Apple TVs to manage all of the content that goes up on the big displays mm-hmm. inside the bus. They have HD cameras mounted everywhere so they can in essence, create documentaries about everything that's done on the bus. And, I mean, it was just so cool what they have there. And not just because it was a Big Apple Love Fest bus, in essence. You know, it's because that bus can go anywhere and take the tools to teach kids all about music. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's, like, so critical because so many schools don't have a music program anymore. So having something like this to come in and fill that gap, I think is just phenomenal. And the bus is so cool. I mean, it's fantastic.
Cool.
Yeah. So how was that for a glowing endorsement for the John Lennon tour bus?
It's a glowing endorsement.
Yeah, as well it should be. That was just a fantastic thing.
Awesome.
Yeah, and just one other little thing I noticed. In the media lounge, which, of course, the general public doesn't get to see, I'm in there and I'm working on articles, and I was amazed at the number of journalists there that were using Macs. Hmm. And I was also amazed at the number of journalists that were using G4 iBooks, which, you know, very surprising. Tons of iPhones on the expo floor, but the G4 iBook was really popular in the media lounge.
Hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah, not what I expected, but, you know, hey, there you go. If I'm not being surprised by things around me, well, what a boring life I would have.
Indeed, and indeed. And speaking of exciting, let's move on to the quick tip and close the show out.
I think that sounds like a great idea. All right, so today's quick tip is about scrolling in background windows. And this is a great tip for people that have a MacBook Pro, a MacBook, a PowerBook, G4, any of the laptops that will let you do the two-finger scrolling, you know, where you take two fingers and move up and down on your trackpad, and then it scrolls in a window. So, you know, you can do that in your active window, no problem. But you can also do that in non-selected or background windows. And you don't have to do anything special to make it work. All you have to do is move your mouse pointer over the window that you want to scroll and do the two-finger scroll. And
it'll
scroll
cool.
the background window for you. So you can be working in one application and scroll a window in another application. And this is actually something I do, like, every day, because I'll be writing an article in BB Edit or something like that, and then I'll have OmniWeb or Safari in a background window. And there'll be something that I need to read in there. I need to scroll up to see more. Instead of jumping to the app and scrolling, I just move my cursor over, do the two-finger scroll, and I can stay in the application I really want to be in. And
that
you can
makes
do
sense.
This with... Yeah, it's really nice. Saves me a lot of time. And you can do this in with some scroll mice too, you know, have the little scroll button. Mm-hmm. Some of them will do this too. But, you know, if you have one of the Apple laptops that supports the two-finger scrolling, it's going to work in Leopard.
Cool. That's a great tip, man. Thanks.
Hey, I'm always looking for stuff to make your life easier.
You're the best. Take us out.
Okay. Now, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people of the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. That's us plus John. And our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.